It's 8:19. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. I'm Mark Smith. Joining me this morning by phone is U.S. Senator John Bozeman. Good morning, Senator.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, as always.
Well, good to have you with us. We have this new terrorist threat we were just hearing about on NPR Morning Edition. New terrorist threat called ISIS or ISIL, or, you know, depends on who you're talking to at the time, what they're called. But
right.
Most commonly known as ISIS, I guess. How real is the threat, and are they a threat to the U.S. directly?
I think it is a very, very real threat. They're a small group that's become a very large group now, at least 30,000 and growing daily. They've been able to capture and hold a large swath of the Middle East, and they're really good about actually putting in governance and things, you know. So they are very much a threat to that region of the country, and I think a threat to us. I mean, we had two citizens with their heads hacked off, and so with the threat that we'll see you in the White House, see you in New York, and things like that. So they have to be taken seriously. And the other problem is that we have a number of good allies over there, like Jordan, and there's a real threat to this, to them disrupting the entire Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Well, the president has announced how he plans to fight this threat. What are your thoughts about the president's plan? Are we going to build a strong international coalition that will provide real assistance in the effort?
Well, he's really got kind of a three-pronged attack, and the key is getting all of that done, and that's really the challenge. First of all, airstrikes, which they've done, and that's has really made it such that it's kind of blunted the ability of ISIS to gain new territory. He's proposed a coalition. They're working really hard, and I think having some success in building a strong coalition, not only among our Western allies, but also in the Middle East. This is their homeland. They need to step up and fight for it. And then the other thing that has become somewhat controversial is arming the moderate groups. The key to that is making sure that somehow these people are vetted so that the arms won't wind up in the wrong places and that we wind up training people that ultimately wind up fighting us or our allies in the region later on. So it's a daunting task. I think we have to respond. If we don't, then when you take and cut off a couple Americans' heads, if we don't react, then you're in a situation where it makes it where these types of groups will just up and escalate what they their attacks on the United States.
Now, they were just talking about on NPR also how the over in the House they have passed a bill supporting the president's arming and proposal to arm and train the moderate rebels in Syria. But as I understand it, the bill in the Senate to do that is going to be tied to a spending bill. How is that going to turn out? And there are a lot of people opposed to that, linking those bills together.
Well, what they did in the House, my understanding is that they had the spending bill and then linked it. They had an amendment to the spending bill, and so they voted on the amendment, and then that became part of the spending bill. Mm-hmm. That will come over to the Senate as one group, and then the vote will be on the entire bill, which ultimately the House did also.
Yeah,
I hope that makes sense.
Well, it is hard to understand how this works.
The important thing is that I think that at the end of the day that we will get the spending bill passed.
Uh-huh.
In the sense, you know, that's what funds government.
Right.
Government's calendar year is October, starts in October, so we need to get that done. Part of that it was amended in the House and then had the president's proposal in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will vote on that in the Senate today, and I think that will pass. The concerns is the vetting process, making sure that we're, you know, spending dollars in the right direction of that.
Right.
I know that the president's very hesitant. I'm very hesitant about putting American boots on the ground over there in the sense of people that are fighting. What this would do would allow you to have boots on the grounds with a friendly force that are fighting not Assad. That was the question, you know, a month or two ago. But this would be fighting ISIS, which, again, I feel like is a real threat to the United States.
Well, I know a lot of people are concerned about getting involved in any kind of fighting in Iraq again, and concerned about the slippery slope. You know, we've had in the past problems where we started out with military advisors that wouldn't be involved in actual fighting, and then, well, they assist a little bit in a few strikes, and then they need some reinforcement. It just escalates from there, and and that's what people don't want to see, I think. A lot of folks are concerned about that.
No, I think you're exactly right, and I think Congress is very concerned about that as well as the public, and that's why lots of discussion. I think there'll be safeguards, and I would like to see. I think the president should come to Congress, you know, and ask for permission if anything is escalated. I think he should ask for permission to go into Syria with the airstrikes and things for a couple of reasons. I think the authority is questionable. And then also, just to have the support of Congress, which I think he would get, really does show not only to the public, you know, that we're all in this together, but also to our allies. I think that would send a strong message. So I would like to see the president ask for support for airstrikes.
Well, you think Congress will back him in if he comes to Congress like that?
Yes, sir, I do. Again, if he has a limited program going on, and then a clear objective, and I think that's you know, the concern that you're alluding to. We need an objective. We need to know what victory is. We need to know you know, what we're trying to do specifically, and then, very, very importantly, how you get out of there.
Right.
That's been the problem in the past.
Right. Another big situation that we're having to deal with right now internationally is the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. It just seems to be getting worse by the day. And I understand the U.S. is now urging the U.N. to get more involved in helping with the crisis. It seems that you know, the crowding in the urban areas there and some cultural issues and customs are just making the problem worse. They need all kinds of things: treatment facilities, medicine, education on how to stop the spread of the disease. How are we responding, and is it enough?
Well, I think we're starting to respond now, and you know, we're going to have to wait and see if it's enough or not. But what's happened is this was a little fire that was smoldering, and now it's turning into a forest fire that is about to rage out of control. I asked Senator Harkin last week if he would have a hearing. He did that this week about this issue, and so they had the CDC and various others, NIH up here testifying. And the problem is that when you look, you know, there's thousands of cases reported. Most of those cases have occurred in the last 3 weeks. It's starting to spread exponentially. The other problem is it spreads and it gets into host after host. Then you have the problem of it mutating. Right now, you have to touch somebody that's sick or be in contact directly. There's real fear that this thing will go into the air, and that would be a huge problem. I think it's actually a national security threat for the United States right now. And I know that's strong talk, but if it gets into Nigeria and these other places, we live in a very, very small world, and you know, it would be difficult if this thing started to spread throughout not only Africa but the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that there are some medications that can help. We've had a couple of doctors come back home and been able to be treated and get better and get well from this. Is there, what's the potential for getting this medication more widely produced and used?
Well, one of the witnesses at the hearing was the doctor that did come back, the missionary, and was talking about the threat and things. So NIH was there. So what we've got to do is make it such that we start really gearing up and producing these things on a wide scale. Now, the problem is that, you know, this stuff has not really gone through a lot of human testing. And so you have to be very careful about, you know, solving one problem and creating another. And so that's another area that there's lots of work being done right now. And so hopefully we'll be able to gear up in the very near future and have the drugs. Working really hard on a vaccination, you know, to keep so that you could vaccinate people and keep this from happening. But it really is a serious problem that in listening to the experts, CDC and things, they are truly very alarmed because of the rate of growth in the last 3 weeks.
I want to look at a couple of issues back here at home, domestic issues. I know you're paying very much attention to the EPA ruling, proposed rule on carbon emissions. They're, I understand, extending the comment period on that to allow a little more time for comments to come in on that. This rule, as I understand, would cut emissions by 30% by 2030. Now, just as a layman here, not knowing much about the energy industry, just, you know, basic facts, it doesn't sound too drastic. What's the problem?
Well, the problem is that Arkansas, a number of states, in fact, the industry in general, has significantly cut already. And so you have a baseline that doesn't take a lot of that into account. And so this is talking about an additional 30%. And what you get into is when you get in these areas, then it becomes very, very costly to convert. And I think everybody agrees that if we do this, we're going to lose, many, many coal-fired plants. And then also it'll be very difficult for a coal-fired plant in the future to come online. What that does is, in Arkansas is like fifth, I believe, in the sense of being affected, you know, and having to lower their emissions. We're a coal-fired state. What that's going to do is significantly drive up the cost of electricity. And so you worry about jobs, you know, the heavy industries trying to compete overseas. Cheap energy is the way that you do that. So I think it's going to be a job killer. You also worry about people on fixed incomes. You worry about single moms that are, you know, struggling now. And if your utilities go up, if your electricity bill goes up significantly each month, you have nothing to show for that. And so these are the things that really are difficult on the average hardworking Arkansan.
Now, I actually read one article that said that states like Arkansas might actually benefit from coal power plants switching to natural gas because Arkansas has natural gas. Is there a possibility of a benefit?
Well, that's you can always read, you know, something by whoever, but I'd say that the vast majority agree that what this will do is significantly increase rates, and in the future, you know, natural gas, we are benefiting from that. The same group, though, that's trying to drive up the cost of this and prevent, coal-fired plants is trying to prevent fracking and everything else. So it's difficult. But I do know that one of the blessings that we have in Arkansas is, relatively cheap electricity. We need to preserve that. The other problem is, in order for this to work, is that you've got to get India and China, the major polluters, and some of the other developing nations that are coming online, you have to get them to participate. And they said they aren't going to do it. So what you'll see is the United States in a situation where it's all pain and no gain. And certainly, you know, we need to do all we can do to keep the atmosphere clean and things. But you have to do it based on sound science. You have to weigh the economic impact, and you have to use common sense. And I think a lot of that is lacking in this ruling.
There's a vote today on Scottish independence. A lot of Americans are watching this with curiosity to see what's going to happen. I know, you know, this part of the country was settled by a lot of Scots.
Right.
And, so people are interested in this. What impact could this vote have on us in the U.S.?
Well, it's an interesting situation, and it's been difficult to poll in Scotland. It seems to be just razor thin. I think that a lot of people, you know, in their zeal for nationalism and things, which, you know, is a good thing. The Scots are very proud people. But you have to weigh, you know, what are you going to do about currency? What are you going to do about defense? And this is about 8% of the UK's economy, population, tax base. So it really is a big deal. So all of that's going to have to be worked through. I would, you know, they have to make their own mind up. But, you know, certainly the United Kingdom seems to be functioning pretty well as it is. I think a lot of these problems would make it such that it would be really difficult for them to go alone. I know that our country, though, will support, you know, whatever happens and do our best to, you know, make it work. As you say, you know, there's a number of Scots in Arkansas that settled here many, many years ago and have really helped make Arkansas the great state that it is.
All right, one last question. Earlier this month, Democrats had proposed a constitutional amendment that they said was designed to lessen the influence of big money on politics in the election process. Republicans initially voted to move the bill forward in the Senate, but then ultimately the votes were to block the bill, and all the Republicans voted to block the bill while all the Democrats supported it. And now the Democrats are saying that you're okay with billionaires buying elections. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's interesting because that's the talk is over the money in politics, but the reality is that this went much further than that. It made it such that if I wanted to furnish money for a blogger, somebody that was blogging, or if I wanted to furnish money for a pamphlet regarding an election or someone, all of that could potentially be prohibited. So really, it's the first time that and money has to do with all of those things. So for the first time, you're really backing up significantly on the First Amendment. So it wasn't just about running television commercials by, as you say, you know, people that have deep pockets, but also all of these other things. And so the reality is, you could rename it to the incumbent's bill of protection. Because all of those things work towards keeping incumbents in power.
Well, we're out of time. I appreciate your time today, sir.
Thank you so much for having me, as always. Appreciate it.
Senator John Bozeman joining us from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.